I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Discover a new way to record with iZotope Spire Studio. With this portable multi-track recorder, you can quickly and easily capture your songs at the highest quality via the built-in mic or dual inputs. Spire Studio automatically detects your instrument to sculpt the tone and set input levels. Wirelessly pair it with your iOS or Android device to add creative amps and effects, edit, mix, collaborate with bandmates, and export your songs. Now available at retailers like Sweetwater, Alto Music, Amazon, as well as Thomann and Andertons in Europe. Look for Spire Studio on Black Friday for an amazing discount and learn more at iZotope.com/Spire/nerds or follow links in the description of this podcast. Introducing the all-new Mariposa Omar Rodriguez Lopez signature model electric guitar from Ernie Ball Music Man. The latest design from the ground-up signature model in a long list of unique and often groundbreaking artist instruments. Unlike most other brand signature releases, Music Man team up with each artist to design every single element of their instrument. From the body shape to the pickups, controls, and construction type, each new addition to the Music Man signature series is as individual as the player they work with. And the Mariposa is no exception. Featuring an offset angular Akume body shape, providing a beautiful, unique appearance whilst retaining maximum balance and playing comfort. Gorgeous custom pickguard designs, laser etched with an original ornate floral design and coordinated to complement each specific finish option. And unique and versatile dual volume pots to create a natural variation in the high end when set at different levels. Available in Imperial Black, Imperial White, Dorado Green, and of course, Pueblo Pink. Check them out in the description of this podcast or at music-man.com. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the most guitar-y of all guitar podcasts. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by the magnificent Mark Packham,
12 stone,
and the gelatinous Jay Cross.
You didn't plug my mic in.
No, you plugged the mic in.
I plugged the mic in,
not the headphones.
I didn't plug your headphones.
I had to do it myself.
I'm sorry, Jay.
Well, it's just not the sort of technical support I appreciate.
You get paid for this.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
Can you turn my headphones up, please?
Yeah, sure. I can turn your headphones up.
See behind the curtain.
You want to talk into the microphone, Joe? I know you always tell me to do it.
I'm just working out where Jay's headphones are. Jay, check your headphones.
Is that number three? Because that's me.
Oh, yeah, that was you. Is that better, Jay?
Oh, that's better. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no problem. Wonderful.
Can you put number three back to where it was, please?
Yeah, I can put number three. Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay, fine.
Can
there you
go. Turn yourself off? And not, I mean...
You just want me to leave.
In the sense of this podcast.
If you could just leave this all set up.
If you just shut yourself down.
Right. Well, maybe if, like, you know. Yeah, you go. Come back in an hour or so and you can collect your stuff and go home and edit whatever gold Mark and I have come up with.
Okay, sure. I'll do that.
Can you be the sort of silent partner? I don't even mind if you take the money. I just never want to have to talk to you ever again.
Anyway, yes, welcome to another episode of the Guitar Nerds Podcast.
We're always talking to each other.
Yes, that's true. That's true. We are. Lots of things seem to have happened this week. I've been away on tour.
Yeah.
And whilst I've been away on tour, Jay Cross has bought things.
I have.
Which is unusual.
I also got to see loads of cool gear on tour, which we'll come to at some point. But I think, first of all, before we get into anything else, Jay Cross, you seem to be, for the first time in a while, really rapidly increasing your collection. I feel like you and Mark are sort of, you know, going through a bit of a buying frenzy, whilst we're seeing sort of Matt sell things like his Ocean Pink Les Paul Custom.
Well, I'm also selling stuff. I'm going through a bit of a phase of trying to cut back on the amount of stuff that I've got. I just feel like I've been a little bit stagnant with gear recently. So I've got a bit of money tied up in some stuff that I'm maybe not using as much as I should do.
Stocks and bonds and things.
Exactly. Yeah. I hear that the Starbucks stock I've got is maturing. So I think I'm going to sell.
Yeah, and sell then, low, buy high.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, but basically, I just this week I managed to score a real banging deal on what's going to end up being a bit of a parts caster, I think.
Ooh,
for
this
me.
This is exciting. I know, I'm excited about you building something.
I know, it's not something that I'd normally do, but this was a really good deal, and I feel like it was too good to turn down, really. So basically, I have got the body from a 72 Tele Custom.
Right. American or
Mexican?
Mexican. Right.
So from the
polyfinish,
yes, from the classic series range, which obviously has been discontinued now and is superseded by the Vinteras. Yeah. But this is an older one. I'm not sure how old it is, to be honest with you. I mean, they're all older, of course, you know. classic gag.
I need to get a little bit bummed.
Yeah. Classic gag. Anyway, I got that, and the neck is a little bit different. Actually, it's the neck from an American 72 thin line telly.
Okay.
But they obviously fit together. They're three bolt. I did have a mild moment of panic when I brought it home. I was like, oh no, it's okay.
It's three bolt. Three bolt looks cool.
Three bolt does look cool. You're right, actually. I have never really been a big fan of the thing that's weird about this for me is I've always made a big song and dance of the fact that I'm not a huge fan of 72 tellies. Mm-hmm. And mainly that comes down to the pickups.
Right.
I mean, obviously
But it's still a telly pickup in the bridge.
It's still a telly pickup in the bridge. The one for me that I've never got on with is that wide range humbucker.
So
I've always found
prefer a lipstick style thing, single coil.
Yeah. I mean, I've always preferred a kind of, I like treble and I like mids, and what you get from that 72 telly pickup, the reissues, is kind of more of a woolly sound.
It's definitely more soupy, isn't it?
Yeah,
those wide range humbuckers, they're especially sort of low end.
Yeah,
intense.
And I mean, actually, from what I've been told, they don't sound actually that much like the original pickups, because the original pickups that were in there were Kunafe magnets, which you can't get a hold of anymore, so they're slightly different, and you know, they've taken on a kind of world of their own, and people love them. Dan Grace, who I work with, who we've talked about on the podcast before,
friend of the podcast,
he's got 72 telly 72 reissue, and he absolutely loves it. And you know, some people love it. I really want that like harsh ear piercing.
But do you ever play on anything other than the neck
on the, you mean the bridge?
The bridge, yeah. Sorry.
Well, so actually, my offset telly, which I have actually just put up for sale.
I think about
moving it on.
Finally going.
It is going. And also, when I plug in the Mustang at home, I tend to play on the neck pickup, just because I think that the neck pickup is a little bit more musical. I think it kind of lends itself to being played by itself more than the bridge pickup, which obviously cuts through the mix a bit more. It's exactly the same as a conversation that we've had a number of times about why when you're playing kind of high gain guitar at home in your bedroom and you scoop the mids, it sounds great.
Yeah.
But as soon as you try and do that live, or as soon as you try and do that with a band, your guitar just disappears.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it just, you know, they're two very different things.
So you were saying neck for home, bridge for life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's what I've always liked. So I'm in two minds as to what to do about the pickup. So, you know, do I try and find... I was talking... We talked about it very briefly in the chat of the live podcast, which you guys recorded last night.
Yes.
Yeah, but it doesn't actually go out until Thursday.
Don't worry, no spoilers.
Thursday for Patreons, Friday for listeners.
For listeners.
For other people.
For regulars.
Well, you know.
For the scum that don't pay.
All right, mate, calm down. You're standing up.
Like,
sorry, it's okay.
I'm sit down, Mark.
Put your shirt back on.
So I had a couple of suggestions of neck pickups that were, you know, kind of similar. Lindy Fralin, which is a company that I am familiar with, but I don't really know much about.
Right. So it's just a standard humbucker size gap, yeah? So you can put anything in.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah, I think so. So, but yeah, anyway, I've got that and I'm going to try and do something. I don't know what it is I'm going to do. Quite excited. Maybe I'll get gold hardware.
Oh,
maybe I'll build the ultimate Jay Cross doesn't like this guitar.
But I mean, here's that you could do things like, because there's no, you can go to like a custom sort of pickup manufacturer and you could do something like what, you know, I mentioned it on the live podcast. And I think I mentioned it a bit last week, but what Treetone did for my guitarist Tim, who wants to play P90s but just got an SG with humbucker routing, so he had them make him P90s in humbucker housing.
Yeah.
It's like really aggressive sort of Gibson style
thing.
So you could get something made up that's a bit more in line, like get a P90 in the bridge rather than a wide range.
I could do, but I don't own anything with a humbucker at the moment,
right.
And I haven't done since I sold my Les Paul Traditional, which was probably 4 or 5 years ago now.
What's in your double cut Les Paul
P90s?
Junior? Oh, it's P90s.
Yeah, it was
right.
A special. It's a Les Paul special.
Right.
Junior special. So it's, it's P90s. So I don't own anything with a humbucker in. So yeah, I was thinking about maybe going down. I've talked about the Fender Double Tap a lot, which is a pickup that I really like. The way that it approaches coil splitting and tapping in a really interesting way. So I was thinking about maybe putting one of those in there. I think that might be cool.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, I'm not sure. So basically, I'm after some advice, really. Anything that you guys would suggest? Anything that the listeners would suggest?
No neck pickup.
Okay.
Ooh, I like that.
I mean,
that's what Tim did with.
That's
Tim,
completely with his... the opposite of what I'm asking.
No,
but it does
pickup.
Look cool if you just leave it as a whole. Tim did that with his SG. Is just left a big empty space.
I'm saying go
great.
The other way. Get a custom plate built
that right. covers it up.
Oh, covers it
I
up.
Do. I do like the idea of that.
And then just one volume control, no tone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do like the idea of that, but that does completely go against why I've got this guitar, which is to have a guitar with a humbucker in it.
Yeah, you're not going to use that humbucker pickup.
Probably not. But you know, we are where we are. But yeah, so I've got that, and we'll see where we go with it.
Very cool. So on the neck, you still need to get tuners for it as well.
Still need to get tuners, yeah.
But it's completely finished and fretted.
Yes, yeah. Which, as you pointed out, really skinny, horrible vintage frets.
Oh, I loved it. Yeah, lovely skinny vintage frets.
Yeah, really, sort of as you say, really skinny, horrible vintage frets.
Vintage tinted lacquer neck, lovely, big, greasy, slow sort of lacquer. Oh yeah, that's what I'm into. That was into that neck. You must hate it. I don't know why you bought it.
Yeah, it does seem a little bit weird, but you know, sometimes you got to throw yourself outside of your comfort zone, you know.
Yeah,
and
I think it sounds cool.
You just got to speculate to accumulate, you know. Spend money to make money. You got to live fast and die young, fingers crossed.
That is a thing. So I just I got back from the first bit of my my tour, where I've been touring with this band called Body Hound.
Yeah, Ice-T.
Is it what?
Ice-T.
Yeah, Ice-T's band, Body
Ice-T's
Hound.
Oh, is that a thing?
No, we're making a joke. Ice-T's band is called Body Count.
Oh, I see. Oh, I understand. That was good. Yeah. No, so I was touring with this band, Body Hound, who are like...
Oh, yeah, Ice-T.
That's what Ice-T's band are called.
Yeah, that's right.
More like Rich T.
So, Body Hound are this weird band because they're quite young and they're absolutely not gear obsessed. They're just really good players, which I can't stand.
I was going to say, could you? I bet you couldn't even compute that, could you?
Oh no, it's horrible. So I know them quite well. I've known them for years, but it's still difficult because, like, you know, they have conversations. And here's the thing: the bulk of the rest of my band are all very technically able and trained guitarists, so they can talk in terms of sort of and often do talk in terms of scales and things like that, and Lydian things.
Idiots. They want to be talking about like effects loops and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'm good within my band at whenever that starts, turning the conversation just to be about gear. But now we had Body Hound there as well, who are all like jazz musicians. It was just all very tech-based, and I was struggling to get it back on message, which is, of course...
does anyone want to do some class A drugs with me?
No. That
wasn't the message.
That's not the message.
Oh, okay, sorry.
The message is let's talk about equipment and
how good the equipment is.
Yeah, the gear. Talk about the gear.
We're talking about the equipment. God damn it. But yeah, so they've got a couple of guitarists in this band. One of them, Calvin Rhodes, is playing through a Squire Jazzmaster, and it's like a candy apple red with a gold plate and black Jazzmaster pickups.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen anything like that before. He bought it quite recently.
Yeah, so that was recently discontinued. I think it was a standard or a deluxe. I think it might have been a deluxe.
Right.
And it was a guitar that kind of sat sort of by itself in a range that didn't really exist anymore.
I see.
Gold plate?
Yeah, gold plate.
Yeah, gold plate.
Anodized plate.
Yeah, black pickups. Yeah, I remember. They really cool.
Yeah.
Really, really cool guitar. And like they were pretty cheap.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so very, really affordable, but really good. And Kelvin is a full-time musician, so he plays in a couple of jazz bands, a couple of function bands, and he's now just using this Squire Jazzmaster. Yeah. It was so odd to see something like so affordable being used by this guy who literally depends, his career depends on, this guitar has to be able to intonate perfectly.
Yeah.
Has to sort of be versatile.
Well, I thought you said he was in a jazz band. I'm sure he doesn't matter that much.
yeah, it probably doesn't.
It all sort of sounds all right.
Yeah. But yeah, he was using that, and he's moved off of Double Cut Gordon Smith, one of the, I can't remember how they named them.
Is DC2?
GS2.
Gordon Smith, yeah, GS2. So he's moved off of one of those because he said it was too dark. He said it wasn't versatile enough for the amount of different things that he was getting. But I mentioned it briefly on the on Guitar Nerds Live that me and Mark shot. He really struggled to couple that guitar with a Boss Katana because he was borrowing Tim's amplifier and kind of make it warm enough for him. He was finding the Jazzmaster and that as a combination were very thin. So, you know, I don't know. It'd be interesting to maybe hear from listeners about your experiences with Boss Katanas and if you've ever found a guitar that hasn't worked well with it. Because I mentioned this a bit on the live podcast again, but I'm using the Katana through basically every single guitar that comes through the Harlequin Guitar Club. And I'm yet to find one where I'm like, oh, this doesn't sound good. And yeah, it was a real, real struggle for him.
So just to confirm, yeah, that was the deluxe Jazzmaster, which I'm pretty sure doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
So that was
quite a weird model, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, because I can't remember the chronology of it completely, but I think it maybe came out before the. Did it come out before the Vintage Modifies? No, I don't think it did. I think it came out the NAM after, and I think there was a bunch of guitars that came out around the same time,
right.
And it just, you know, a load of them didn't survive. That was the only one that kind of survived for so long. But yeah, Tunematic Star Bridge. Adjust-O-Matic, I think is what they
called. Oh, that's interesting.
And yeah, Adjust-O-Matic Bridge. And yeah, really cool, really interesting. They look great. And yeah, they were really reasonably priced.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just kind of sat in a series kind of that didn't really exist anymore. Because there was a bunch of deluxe Strats as well. I'm not sure if they still exist. But yeah, very cool. Very cool.
Very cool indeed. The other guitarist is left-handed. Joe Nichols, and I was talking to him quite a lot about his struggle to find things that are a bit unique in the left-handed market, which was, you know, kind of really interesting because it's something that I think, whilst my guitarist Tim is also left-handed, it's less hard for Tim because he strings right-handed, which means he often buys right-handed guitars and has them converted, whereas Joe Nichols plays left-handed normally. So he's limited to the left-handed market, despite the fact that he likes weird guitars and he really struggled to get hold of anything. So he went to Ibanez, and Ibanez gave him a prototype that they never ran with, they still had, of a left-handed model, which was kind of their Jazzmaster shape, but without any contours and bound, top and back bound. And it was like a mahogany body in a sort of cherry finish with binding on the top and bottom, and then the neck was a right-handed neck that they'd put some, there were dots on both sides. So okay. obviously, so the headstock logo is upside down and the tuners are the other way round on it. So okay. they sort of put this together as sort of a last minute prototype.
Is it Setnik?
No, it's a bolt-on.
Okay.
So it is just it's like an Ibanez Jazzmaster, just with a pair of humbuckers.
With a mahogany body.
Yeah, right. With a mahogany body. Really, really unusual, sort of weird left-handed model. But yeah, he was saying that he went to them and was like, look, have you got anything interesting left-handed? He went to Headstock up in Birmingham.
UK, yeah.
And asked them, and they said they didn't have anything that was on the market, but they had this old prototype that had been knocking around, and so they just gave it to him.
Well, fingers crossed that's not, you know, we haven't just leaked something that's coming out at Winter NAMM.
Yeah, I hope so.
No, this wasn't dead. This isn't the prototype. This is the one. This is the marketing sample.
I thought it was really cool. I wish Ibanez would do some more sort of like classic guitars like that, just because... You know, they produce such great quality stuff, and everything that they do at the moment seems to be very ergonomic and modern. They, of course, have the Artcore range, which is all very hollow, I'd just like to see some cool classic stuff again.
I was just having a look right now just to see what the current kind of lineup for Artcore is, because obviously, you know, that they do all the hollow body stuff.
Yeah.
But actually, I'm not sure there is anything right now.
Yeah, there's some stuff. So they did...
Oh, yeah, Artcore.
Yeah, they did a new range last year. I went over to Birmingham to check it all out just at the end of my time at GAC last year. So they essentially released a load of pastel colours in the hollow body series. They did a pink.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
And they did some blues and greens, like a four-string. They do a weird, like, five-string bass in sort of a pastel blue that's still like a jazz hollow body. And they had some cool sort of like jazz style, but you know, Fender style color guitars as well. But it's definitely a weird range. Like they're still not doing anything classic that's not hollow.
Strings Direct are one of the most comprehensive guitar string retailers worldwide, so they definitely know a thing or two about guitar and bass strings, and with that comes the complete understanding of the frustration you get when trying to find a set of strings with the exact gauges you want. Maybe you're looking to tune in Robert Fripp's famous new standard all-fifths tuning, or perhaps you've got a Yamaha G10 synth guitar, which requires 6 16-gauge strings. Who knows? Whatever you're tuning, whatever your gauge, whatever your preferred brand, Strings Direct have you covered with their Strings Direct Custom Gauge Builder. Build your own set of signature strings from scratch with options for electric, bass and acoustic, and with banjo and classical guitars coming soon. And choose from a huge range of the world's most popular string manufacturers. Strings Direct have got us guitar nerds covered. Check them out and build your own set at stringsdirect.co.uk. And on top of that, all Guitar Nerds listeners can take advantage of a 10% discount off of anything on the Strings Direct website throughout November and December. Just use the code NERDS10 at the checkout. And for more info, follow the link in the description of this podcast. This week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast is sponsored by Singular Sound, the music gear company from Miami, Florida, known for the Beat Buddy, the only drum machine that sounds human and is easy to use. It's the first drum machine in the form of a guitar pedal, so you can control the beat with your foot whilst you play. This year, they came out with a new 6-track stereo looper pedal with touch-enabled screen, hands-free mixing, and simultaneous parallel and sequential looping called the Eros Loop Studio. They also came out with a Cably, a portable cable management system that organizes your cables so they'll never get tangled again. This Black Friday, visit singularsound.com to order new gear. Almost all products will be 10% off, and any order automatically enters you into a chance to win a $200 Singular Sound gift card. On top of that, Guitar Nerds listeners get a $10 discount on everything on the Singular Sound website by using discount code GUITARNERD, or follow links in the description of this podcast.
Okay, here's one for you. Here's what I want. NDM4. the Noodles.
Oh, why are we talking about this again? I can't mention Ibanez on this podcast.
Come on, bump in my trunk, Joe. 449.
Yeah, P90s as well.
Is it that a current model?
Yeah, it is.
Is that the one covered in gaffer tape?
No, that guitar hasn't existed for about 15 years.
That's the NDM1. That's the NDM1.
I think that was the NDM1, yeah. That guitar hasn't existed for a long time. But this is actually very classy looking. So it's... Again, it's kind of an offset, like jazz mastery.
It's the Talman. It's kind of the Talman shape, isn't it?
It's kind of the Talman shape. It's more like a...
It's the Talman shape, but it's got like a weird extended lower horn.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And then single volume, single tone, what looks like a five-way. It looks like a five-way selector switch, but I'm sure it isn't. Hardtail, and the jack input is really weird. It kind of extends down parallel to the strings.
It's an upside down road call, which is the Jazzmaster guitar that I was just talking about.
Right. Okay.
So actually, as this is an upside down one.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Anyway, I really like it. I think it's cool. Didn't he have a detuner on for a while as well? Like a
hip shot sort of.
I'm not sure any of his models had that, but they did do that for a while. They did that, hip shot detuner.
I'm sure he did on his, because I remember thinking that was weird because the Offspring only ever played in E.
Really? Oh,
as far as I can remember, yeah. So, but anyway, I can't really remember how we got around to talking about Ibanez. Oh, your mate.
Yeah, I was just talking about Ibanez.
Basically, what you're saying is we should be talking about Noodles all day, every day.
Yeah,
no, what I'm saying is I would really like to see Ibanez go back to some of their old stuff. Noodles
NDM1.
No, I mean, older than that. I keep going back to the Ibanez Roadster bass that I owned. One of the best basses. Ibanez Musician. Like the guitar and basses in that series, they were some of the coolest things I've ever played. I think Ibanez should be going back to really heavy mahogany through neck guitars.
Oh yeah,
just what's
popular at the moment.
Yeah. Everyone really wants that through neck, 7-piece neck, all the way down. Wenge walnut,
yes,
Wenge.
Throw some Jatoba in there. Get some Jatoba in there.
All of that.
Yeah. Oh yeah!
I want a 13-piece neck, please.
Oh yeah,
13 stone
great.
Neck.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's absolutely. Now, Mark, you've written something on our podcast notes that I don't really understand in the general topics here.
Four words: Noel Gallagher's Les Paul. The reason being,
no, he's not.
No, you're right. He is not. But he did play one for a while. So, in fact, it was this morning.
I thought he played Union Jack guitars from Argos.
Yeah. So, I was looking at I watched Oasis on Jules Holland, and I believe it was 1994, or maybe 1995, can't remember. Anyway, so two things that are great about it. Firstly, Liam clearly has not turned up, and they play a song, and it's like, I can't even remember which tune it was. One of the Oasis tunes where Liam sings. It wasn't Wonderwall.
Oh, okay.
But Noel's singing it instead, and they're doing it as a 4-piece rather than a 5-piece. And then there's a slightly awkward interview afterwards where Jules Holland basically is like sits Noel down and he's like, where's Liam? And Noel's like, don't know. Don't know where he is. And then he says something like, has all the touring been getting to him or something? And then Noel goes, don't know, but I'm definitely going to get to him after this. Something like that. I'm really threatening. And anyway, so he was playing a Gibson Les Paul. And I thought, actually, early on, firstly, it sounded amazing, like incredible guitar sound. It's Les Paul into a Marshall, clearly just everything turned all the way up.
Right.
You know, lovely. And I thought early on, and if it was 94, I was thinking they're playing like Epiphone stuff. Like a lot of the stuff before the first album, they're all playing Epiphones, whether it be Hollow Bodies or for a long time, he just played an Epiphone Les Paul Standard.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, yeah. But
I think there's their first televised show, I think, is them playing on TFI Fridays.
Wouldn't be TFI Friday. It might be like The Word or something.
Was that Chris Evans
as well? That's TFI Friday. The Word is like Terry Christensen.
I think their first TV appearance was on TFI Friday. I'm sure it was. I'm sure it was Chris Evans. And yeah, they're all playing. They're all playing Epiphone. Well, you know, both of them are playing
Captain America.
Yeah, yeah. Captain America himself playing Epiphone Les Pauls.
It is, in fact, The Word.
Oh, okay.
Which
I hate when he's right.
I know. It's, I only know because I've definitely watched that video before. But yeah, like you say, they're playing Epiphones and stuff. But I was like, that Les Paul sounds absolutely amazing, and it looks wicked as well. What is that? So I looked it up. 1960 Les Paul. Mm. And I was like, okay, that's cool. And then I did a bit of the reading on the history of it. So that was the guitar used on the first album. In particular, they reckon Slide Away and Live Forever. And the guitar is actually borrowed from Johnny Marr, who I believe... where did I... I saw this. He bought it from... I think Pete Townsend.
Crikey, really?
Gibson, Les Paul. I was doing a reading, and the page that I pulled up, I now can't find. But yeah, definitely borrowed it from Johnny Marr for that album. And then the kind of end of that story is that he broke the neck, but not at the headstock, broke it at the heel, so
what?
Where the neck joins the body. By basically battering someone with it. this is a quote from equipboard.com. Unfortunately, he broke the guitar's neck at the heel in 1994 in Newcastle when a fan climbed on stage and Noel smacked the fan with the guitar.
That's funny because as soon as you started talking about this, I started looking up because I was pretty sure that he played a Les Paul that was given to him by Johnny Marr. I was sure I'd heard that.
Yeah.
And this website Ground Guitar is actually a little bit more they're a little bit more forgiving than what that article says. So here it says, unfortunately he broke the guitar's neck in 1994 in Newcastle when a fan climbed on the stage and Noel used the guitar to defend himself.
Right, so
they're perhaps a little bit more diplomatic about what happened there.
So not,
he smacked the
I mean, I said battered. So.
That's a heavy old guitar to swing at someone.
1960. Definitely. Les Paul.
Also used in the video for Live Forever. Pete Townsend. That's
right,
where it came from. So quite a history. God knows where that guitar is now, whether it's still in Johnny Marr's hands or not. But but it's worth a few quid.
Just reading after this. Did you see, and actually this article is really interesting, did you see the guitar that he used after he broke the neck on Johnny Marr's now almost priceless Les Paul?
Go on.
He used a Les Paul Custom, which Johnny Marr was generous to lend him another one. So this also belonged. It was like, yeah,
this one's even heavier, mate. Do some more damage.
Fool me once, shame on you. You know, but that's really cool. That's really cool. I'm sure I've read this before about Johnny Marr. He just is like, just lends people stuff.
He just seems like a lovely, lovely man.
Just
man.
Seems great. Yeah, yeah, it just seems really cool.
Yeah, what a quality dude. So this week, you know, after the last couple of weeks, I think on one of the Guitar Nerds Lives. You two were talking about weird guitars, and the subject of Warwick came up.
Yep.
And I remembered, like, you know, when I had some time playing a Warwick Buzzard and how cool those were, and I was like, man, I really like the Warwick Buzzard. I really like the Warwick Jack Bruce.
I knew there was something wrong with you.
Yeah, you know, I like the Starbase, and I started to think, I was like, maybe I need a Warwick. And then, of course, Juan Alderete's now playing Warwick. He's got his own idol maker. I really want a Jonas Hellborg if they weren't £8,000 or £6,000 to purchase a Hellborg. So I was like, yeah, Warwicks are really cool. And that led me on to being like, to spending a lot of time on their website. And I was like, hey, you know a guitar brand that we've spent virtually no time on? Framus.
This week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast is sponsored by Celestion and their incredible new Neo 250 copperback speakers. Sacrificing none of the delicious musicality of your favorite Celestions, the Neo 250 copperback is a neodymium speaker that supplies tons of tone without the signature cone breakup immediately associated with the classic Celestion growl. Rated at a monstrous 250 watts, the Neo 250 works together with your amp to provide fantastic dynamics, delivering all the headroom and touch sensitivity
you could possibly need. All that at a modest £5, which is that's like 2.2 kilograms. Check them out at Lean Business in the UK, Tube Amp Doctor in Germany, Algam in France, Eco Music in Italy, Eberloud in Spain, plus gear for Music Toman and Backstrop. And if you're in the US, then you've got retailers like Sweetwater, Musician's Friend AMS, Parts Express, Loudspeakers Plus, and of course Amazon. For more details, check them out, Celestian.com.
Yeah, I mean, so Framus, I think, are a bit of a weird one for us because they've always done really... They've always had an amazing custom shop.
Yeah.
But the gear has always been, like, unattainably expensive. Well, yeah. And they've always... Or they've also always done really cheap stuff under the Framus... Or they have in the past done really cheap stuff under the Framus name. And it's always been a little bit difficult. Also, just from a purely personal point of view... My introduction to Framus was the seven string custom shop Framus that someone custom ordered at GAC and then decided that they didn't want to buy.
Oh, no.
So we had sitting in the shop for, I mean, it probably got buried into the foundations, I assume is the only.
No, it went out. I remember it going out. Someone, he was like, "This is my dream guitar. Like, this is the thing I've always wanted." It's like, "Well, that's funny. Well, that's what the last guy said." And turns out, didn't want it.
Well, Framus actually sell their guitars in the same way that Warwick do. Obviously, they are owned and operated by Warwick, but they do their standard series, team built and master built series. And that's how they separate their models. And of course, they have different things available in each series. But I was kind of like, well, you know, I look at the team built and master built stuff on the Warwick site a lot, and it's very expensive. But the other thing, just as a personal preference, is it tends to, that price cut goes up because things start to get very bling, things start to get very burly, very sporty.
Burly,
you know, like burled poplar.
Yes,
they're burly,
not like rugged.
No, not like
muscular. Not like me.
No, not like
burly,
like Ben Affleck in Batman. But you know, like more like just you know.
You know, that's a suit, right? That's not his actual body.
No, yeah, you see him like shirtless, pulling tires at one point.
Okay.
Yeah, he's burly.
Okay.
He's a muscly man now.
You've got this thing for Ben Affleck.
He was in Triple Frontier as well, and he looked pretty hench then. It was like a Netflix film.
Okay, that sounds like an adult film.
Triple Frontier with Ben Affleck. Yeah, okay. Anyway, enough of Ben Affleck.
Please, Joe.
I'm just going to mop my brow. Anyway, so the standard series is kind of the series that caught my eye a little bit, just because everything tends to be a bit more simple. And I was checking out the standard series, and it's actually great. They do some really, really nice sort of, you know, classic come modern models, like things that straddle both areas without being too much, without being that classic thing that modern thing that companies like Ibanez do, which is make everything incredibly ergonomic, and you know, just everything ends up looking, you know, less like a guitar and, you know, more like something else. Anyway, the guitars in the standard range are fantastic. I really enjoyed like the Diabolo Pro, which is their one of their only models, maybe their only model that has a scratch plate and is in a kind of a Strat shape, but maybe sort of a little bit wider, a little bit stockier in look. I love the headstock on the Framus, but the Diabolo stuff's great. The Idol Maker was one that I especially liked, which is kind of their reverse Jaguar offset shape, and certainly the Idol Maker is the base version of that made by Warwick, is what Juan Aldrete's playing at the moment. But the Idol Maker's a fantastic looking, really unique instrument. And then of course you've got the Artist series, like Phil X introduced his SG style model, and there is the Panthera as well, which is their single cut, which is lovely, like a kind of slightly smaller body shape to the Les Paul, again slightly stockier. That seems to be the overall look for the range. But I was like, man, there's some fantastic stuff in this series for really reasonable money. I'm just surprised we don't see them out in the wild more.
Well, I think it's the same with Warwick, isn't it? Like, a lot of it's kind of custom build, like you say. And there's not many shops where you could just go and pick one off the peg.
Well, you say Warwick are a massive German sort of powerhouse of a company. Just seems a shame that more of those things aren't out and about.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a vicious cycle, isn't it? Like, the less you see, like, people playing them on stage, you know, like, names,
yeah,
the less inclined they are to be in stores. But then also, like, people aren't going to buy them to then play them on stage, yeah, if that makes sense.
Also, if you remember, we saw... I think it was me and Matty, maybe? Was it at Summer? I feel like it was at Summernam. I was with Matty walking around, and we stumbled across the Framus Warwick booth. And there was a couple of Framus guitars there that looked like kind of non-reverse Firebirds or something like that.
Yes, you were talking about the television series.
And they were, I was admiring them from afar, and they looked fantastic. Really nice kind of stark Dakota red colour and like a kind of, not quite to my taste, but a Lake Placid blue type colour.
Yeah.
And they looked fantastic, but they were like $8,000.
Well, they're now, you were probably looking at the Masterbuilt series.
Which is it's a lot of money.
They are available team built now, which will hit more the $2,000-$3,000 sort of grand mark. Okay. Only a couple of colours in the team built. They are doing that Pelham blue and also a flamed sort of three-tone sunburst as well. But yeah, the television is super cool. And it's really nice to see Framus doing some like retro-styled stuff. Probably the most retro thing they do is the Mayfield.
I'm trying to look through this now. Okay, so basically there's not that... The standard series...
Yeah.
Doesn't have much of the kind of retro stuff.
No,
you have to go to the team build.
You have to go to team build.
But so things like the Blank T, which are, I guess, are a kind of like sucked sweet version of a Telecaster.
Uh-huh.
That's not available in the standard line,
it's
which is
not,
I guess why we're not seeing too many of these guitars.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Finding your perfect home was hard. But thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
No, exactly. But like, if you were to, and listening, you can check this out. It's all on the Warwick website, which doubles up as the Framus website as well. The Mayfield, I think, is a really gorgeous, interesting, I mean, it's essentially their star base body shape.
Yeah, it's like a kind of 335.
It's a thinner 335.
Yeah, you don't mean depth, across the front.
Width. Chubby.
And narrower.
Yes, a narrower 335.
It looks cool. But like you say, it's a lot of money, and at that price point, there's a fair few other options available.
Yeah.
I think, if you're going to buy a guitar from Framus, you're going to be someone who's fallen in love with one of their shapes that isn't a retro guitar.
Like
the Devin Townsend, for example, it almost looks a bit like that, what's that Music Man that we were playing the
Majesty.
Other day? The Majesty. It's kind of got a bit of a Majesty vibe to it.
Not my mic.
Don't drop your mic.
One of the weirder shapes.
I think we saw those at one of the NAMs, and I have a feeling, didn't they do like a, I think they did a kind of Game of Thrones inspired, or maybe that was the...
That was Fender, mate.
No. Those were like the Game of Thrones licensed guitars, but there were some like Game of Thrones inspired that were called like, the man of the watching night or something. It was called something like that. But they were, again, like all kind of S.H.I.E.L.D. inspired.
Winter has come.
Yeah, that's that sort of thing. And again, I think they were a lot of money next to that Devin Townsend, which looked very cool, actually, I think.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those brands where that you're never going to see them all in a store,
no.
Which kind of means that you're not going to see many of them on stage.
But such an incredible build quality from
Don't they have... Was it Warwick and Framus that they have a carbon neutral factory?
Yeah, I wondered if you were going to bring this up.
Yeah. That's really cool. That's really cool. So
we mentioned it before, but probably not for a couple of years.
Yeah.
So explain to the
did
listener.
Did you go to the
I
factory?
Did, yeah. I've been to the Warwick
so
factory.
So from what I remember, you said that basically there's kind of a channel that runs the entire length of the factory.
That's right.
And there are fans that blow down and basically blow any offcuts and shavings of wood into this channel, which then gets led down towards a furnace.
Yeah.
And then that's what powers the factory.
In fact, the Warwick factory runs, and Warwick and Framus factory run so incredibly efficiently that they sell electricity back to the government. Yeah.
Right. Wow. Okay.
Yeah,
amazing.
So it's a fantastic place, and it's just the build quality that's coming out of that factory for both Framus and Warwick is obviously incredible.
Why did you go there? I can't remember.
It was GitCon. It was Retrospectively, if I could go back, I would spend much less time
the pub
with the YouTubers, and I would have spent more time checking out the incredible guitars that were there, because it really was a very, very cool factory.
Yeah.
I was definitely too drunk at that event to sort of appreciate just how incredible some of the stuff was that they had there. What an awesome factory. I'd love to go back at some time. You know, I was
You've
like...
been barred, I reckon.
Yeah, I probably have. But it's actually a really cool company, Framus. I was reading about Framus. I was reading up on Framus because I realized I didn't know anything about them. Because, of course, it's not just... it's not just these very modern guitars that they have now. They're a guitar brand that's existed since 1946. So they've got like
I don't know much about kind of the economic history of Germany.
Ooh, your first big misconception.
Are they not a German company?
They became a German company, but actually a lot to do with the Second World War and how...
of course, because Germany struggled so, you know, incredibly after the Second World War.
So
and that's like 1946. So where did they come from then?
Well, the fellow who put together the company Framus. Now, the name Framus comes from Franconian... musical, so it's Fre and let me see if I can remember the guys that will find the guy's name. Fred Wilfer, who was German, but he actually lived in Czechoslovakia.
Okay.
And that's where he set up the company. The only reason it eventually became German is post Second World War, it became very difficult to be a German living in a different country. So he he moved the company back to Bavaria in Germany. He approached the German government and said, look, I'm, you know, like I've got this sort of violin making, you know, strung instrument making business, you know, can the government help me get, you know, move back into Germany? And Germany were trying to help people who were living in other parts of Europe and reintroduce them to Germany, and so they helped like fund and set up his company. And actually he brought loads of other luthiers back into Germany, and he ended up heading up the company Framus, who dealt with way more than just guitars. They dealt with loads of other strung instruments.
Huh.
But essentially he ended up heading, you know, this big group of people who returned to Germany.
So they were like
luthiers.
So kind of halfway between like a distributor, but also like, not a union, but like a kind of collective group of...
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
And that's where Framus came from. Yeah. Oh, that's really interesting.
And so it was just, you know, when the electric guitar started being popularized, that was when they as a company moved towards like creating electric guitars. Of course, you're going to have a Framus story for us, surely, Mark Peckham.
About what?
Well, Paul McCartney.
I don't know.
Paul McCartney's first guitar was a Framus.
Was it?
Yeah, Paul McCartney's first guitar was
a
Framus.
About that?
Yeah, I am. I am actually sure. Do you know what? I glanced over the story because I was like, I don't need to learn this one because he'll know all about it. The Zenith guitar He'd been given a trumpet for his 14th birthday in 1956, but he learned he couldn't sing and play at the same time, so he swapped it for a Framus Zenith, also known as the Model 17, which he used to compose When I'm 64.
Oh, there we go. I knew that the story about him getting a trumpet and stuff. I did not realise it was a Framus.
Yeah, there you go, yeah. But I mean...
Is it left-handed?
Probably, almost definitely not.
No, I don't think it was. Didn't he learn to play right-handed guitars upside down?
I don't know, mate. You're the one obsessed with the worst
beat.
Yeah,
who'd do that? Who'd do that? What sort of idiot would do that?
But I was then like, you know, because of course Framus went...
The worst beat.
Absolutely the best beat, by the way.
Framus went bankrupt in...
Love you, Paul.
I think he listens.
Yeah, he probably does.
You never know.
He definitely can't hear.
Super
Mondays.
Famous people do listen.
Meat
so
that is true.
Mondays. You never know. Don't bring up Meat Free Mondays.
They went bankrupt in 1975, and it was actually the fellow who started Framus' son, who then brought back the company in the mid 90s and sort of brought them into the Warwick fold and stuff and started making them all with completely new body shapes. Because of course Framus made really cool stuff in sort of the 60s especially. And I'll put this in the podcast notes for Patreon listeners and Mark and Jay. There's a link in our group to a listing currently on Reverb for a Framus Golden Strato Deluxe 1963. And there are a number of these sort of guitars out and about at the moment. In fact, the London Vintage Guitars of Denmark Street Reverb Shop has a load.
I'm glad
of,
you had to think about that. It shows I'm doing my job.
Yeah, I forgot the name. I almost said eBay, but yeah, they've got a wonderful range of like weird Framuses at the moment, and this one especially the Framus Golden Strato Deluxe. So this
guitar is absolutely ridiculous.
I love this.
Those
guitar.
Pickups are at different angles.
So listen
more
to
more bass, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, so to give you an idea of this of this guitar, listener.
Oh my.
This is a Jazzmaster Jaguar style guitar. So with three pickups. But yes, Jay's absolutely right. They're all angled single coils, like you would get in the bridge of a Strat. But all of them are at slightly different angles, almost as if they've used no sort of measure at all to pop them in.
Really uncomfortable to look at.
Really odd angles. But I'm sure it's very deliberate to increase the bass response as you move towards the neck pickup. The scratch plate itself looks like what do you call that laminate wood?
I don't know. You used to work in a kitchen
yeah,
shop.
Yeah, that's true.
It does look like a countertop, but yeah, about a cheap one.
Yeah, like sort of a cheap
in a sort of student flat.
Yeah, yeah, it's that sort of thing. It's very, very weird sort of wood chip scratch plate.
It's also up against the tree, which makes me think maybe it's actually see through.
Maybe it's made of the tree.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a tree behind it. And then, the same as the Jazzmaster, you've got your separate piece of control plate in the top horn. But of course, this one, as I've described, is the Framus Golden Strato. So all the hardware, the pickups, and the control plates are gold. So you've got your three switches, which I presume in this case control each pickup individually. Then you have...
Yeah, they appear to be on-off switches.
Yeah. Then you have the scratch plate for the control panel where you would normally get a control panel, sort of the lower quarter of the guitar. However, in this case, Framus have built the control panel to also include the bridge. So it takes up virtually the entire lower area of the guitar.
Oh, I would say that maybe 15% of this guitar doesn't have a scratch
I was thinking exactly the same thing. It's so weird. And also, when you look at it, the lower scratch plate and the upper scratch plate are both gold, but they appear to be cut from two different styles of material. It could just be the angle that we're looking at it at, but they don't. No, they don't match.
One of them is definitely very tarnished, whether or not they're sort of different, you know, colours.
It doesn't
make any sense.
And then there's a couple of other switches down there, which may be a phase switches.
I don't know. There are two switches, but then you've got 3 to 4 rotaries. And
what's the hook?
Yeah,
there's like a weird hook.
The top volume control seems to not just be a volume control, but it has a hook on it, almost like its own trem arm coming off of the volume control. So
really weird.
Very, very unusual. And of course, the shame is this thing's been finished in Sunburst, which is, you know, a complex finish to do. And then there's only 15% of the guitar you can actually see. It's like, just do it in black, mate. It would have been way easier, much less effort. And you wouldn't have had to get that burst across the entire body. But what an amazing, what an incredibly unusual, super cool guitar. The other thing is it follows the same sort of, idea. Well, it essentially has a cover over the bridge, so a similar sort of thing to what early Leo Fenders were trying to do. You cover up any sort of unsightly bits, which of course makes it impossible.
We just call
them
Fenders now.
Yeah. I don't know why I said Leo Fenders.
Leo Fenders.
But it of course makes it impossible to palm mute. Don't know why
you okay?
I said that. Yeah, fine. I'm just an idiot. But yeah, which makes it impossible.
I plug these into me. I'm a big fan of the old Jim Marshalls.
I love the old
Orville Gibsons. Go. Yeah, go on. Try and think of some new names. Yeah, okay.
Bit of an acoustic player. Yeah. I've got a couple of bobs myself, you know. Yeah. A
couple of bobs.
Anyway, what an awesome guitar. So I was really enjoying not only sort of the current in, like really lovely range of Framer stuff that's available, that's very modern, but also the incredible range of vintage gear that's possible. And actually I will obviously put this link in the podcast notes as mentioned, but Mark and Jay, if you scroll to the bottom, you'll see that there are an awful lot of slightly different versions of the Stratos available in both chrome and gold.
All up against the same tree.
Yes, that's right. This particular shop, the London Vintage Guitars of Denmark Street, London, do seem to have an awful lot of the Strato.
Yeah, so there's this one, this Golden Strato Deluxe 1963. That, oh, my computer's just frozen up. There was another 1963, which also appears to be a gold Strato Deluxe. Which
but
is
slightly different with this plate being gold entire rather than any of the sort of wood chip.
Then there's
bits.
The chrome Strato Deluxe, which is also 1963. God, the prices are all over the place.
But it depends whether they've got two or three pickups as well. So you can pick up the two pickup version for less than £900, which I think is an incredible deal for a guitar that looks this awesome and interesting.
Well, you know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, I suppose.
Okay, anyway, we should move on from this incredible discovery, which is Framus.
How do we talk so long about Framus?
I don't understand. Like, I was thinking about it halfway through. Like, he's managed to crowbar in a brand of the week without, like...
Absolutely.
He tries it every week.
I know, and we never...
Get rid of it.
I think, you bit
I know. I'm feeling a little bit under the weather this week.
I had some history to provide.
Yeah, The history I'm good with. And in fact, I was thinking about it as well. There's... clearly, like, you know, European geopolitical history isn't an area of our expertise.
No,
so
absolutely.
That discussion about, you know, the moving from Germany to Czechoslovakia and back again, it's probably riled up a bunch of people.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Please feel free to write in and correct us somewhere along the lines.
Absolutely, absolutely. Anyway, should we do some news? So first up, Mark Packham.
Hello there.
Why don't you talk to us about a new offering from friend of the podcast, Brian Wampler?
Well, I mean, I almost feel like I don't need to because so many people are talking about this already and it's been, you know, this was announced a long, long time ago. I know.
Okay, cool. Jay Cross, why don't we...
Of course, what I'm talking about is the Wampler Terraform. How are they actually describing it? It's a multi-modulation pedal, I guess, but is there a... No, it's literally just called the Terraform. So as I might have suggested there, it's a multi-modulation pedal. Onboard effects include auto-R, envelope filter, flanger, phaser, univibe, or U-vibe as they call it, rotary, auto-swell, tremolo, harmonic tremolo, chorus, and dimension. There is... What I like about it is... The interface itself is super simple. So you've got your effect type, you've got rate, depth, blend, volume, and then variable. And then variable basically changes depending on which effect you
right.
are
so
using.
So you're going to be dealing with, I guess, the amount of module... No, I guess... I don't know what the variable will be as a function.
It varies, which is why it's variable.
No, I'm thinking about what thing it will control on each of these things.
Well, yeah, okay.
So, for example, on the, I think it's the envelope filter, it affects the queue. So,
of course. Yeah. That was going to be the obvious
one. So it's all things like that. It's always the extra control that isn't covered basically rate or depth. In fact, the list that I've got in front doesn't actually say what the variable does on each of them. But if you go and watch Brian's video, there's it covers it in fair amount of detail. The other thing is plenty of different options in terms of where to save stuff. So you've got 8 storable presets.
Right.
Also tap tempo on the front, stereo ins and outs, as you'd expect. There's MIDI compatibility as well. Plus any control can be controlled via the expression pedal. So if you want to adjust rate depth or the variable, or well, in fact, any of them, if you want to adjust the blend, you can do that with,
oh, that's cool,
with the expression pedal as well. There isn't much more in there. The only other thing, which I didn't actually get to see in the video, and is talked about in the press release, is there's routing capabilities in there. So if you're using it in an effects loop, you can select how do you do this?
So you can have more than one effect on at any one time?
No.
So there's a pre and a post in, is what you're talking about, and a pre and a post out.
That's exactly that, yeah. So you can do kind of like 4 cable method, I think, with the pedal itself.
Cracking.
Yeah, so, exactly that. So basically, if you're using it in, from what I understand, if you're using it in mono, you can, depending on which effect you're on, it can either be pre or post.
Right. That's pretty cool. And you've got expression and MIDI as well.
Yes.
Which is really cool.
Yeah, I need to read more into the routing, so I don't quite, I sort of get how that works, but I need to just confirm it in my brain. Basically, as far as I'm aware, you can have it either going straight into the front end of your amp when you're on some effects, or when you're on others, it will go into the effects loop.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah,
I understand.
So, I need to read through and just confirm that.
Super
exactly
cool.
How it
super
works.
Cool. I mean, you know, I'm not 100% sure how much like a multi-modulation pedal is your sort of vibe, but I'm excited.
Excuse the pun.
I'm excited by something that can do everything in one box. That's not a Moore that can do everything in one box. Like, I would love to have a multi-modulation pedal, but I refuse for that to in turn mean that the vibrato I have really isn't that good, or the chorus I have isn't that great.
That's also, I think you want to be careful, you're not cheapening what this is.
Right.
Because, you know, this is, where I've seen this is being placed up against the Mobiuses of the world.
Well, no, that's what
I'm
saying.
And like the Boss MD500 and the H9. And I think that's the thing, is that really those are kind of the only options you've got if you want a high quality multi-modulation pedal. Really, all you've got are those three. So having this up there, I think, is a really cool option.
Yeah, absolutely.
And obviously, you know what you're getting with OnePlu. It's always going to be good. I mean, the videos that I've seen have you know, sounded really good.
And the key thing for me is, you know, when I think about like the Strymon stuff, and when I think of something like the Mod Factory, is it Mod Factory, the Eventide?
That's, yep,
yeah,
Mod Factor.
Why am I blanking on this? Yeah, Mod Factor. They've all got a bit of a, you know, Starship Enterprise vibe to
them. Totally.
Whereas this isn't that at all. This has got. Everything's on the front, really easy to get in and control
it. I like that it's rotary controls. I think it's my favourite thing about the Fender Reflecting Pool, as you know, it's as an alternative to the Strymon or the Boss. And £300 though on the OnePlu Terraform.
Okay, that's actually less than I was expecting.
Right, yeah, $299, you know, in some places less than that. So yeah, it looks like it's a pretty decent price. It's top endy pricey, but it's a decent price to pay for something that's going to deal with all of your modulation. And it seems like Brian's included enough options: the loop, the expression out, the MIDI control, which means you can take advantage of this to use every element of it without, you know, being one of those, here's my multi-modulation pedal, but of course I need chorus loads, so actually I just set it to chorus and then I don't use any of the other things. Like, it seems like you can actually get hold of all the other bits and bobs, which is pretty good.
Worth mentioning as well, if you are integrating it into a MIDI setup, there are, 120, whatever the maximum MIDI amount of presets is, 128 presets.
Right.
So, yeah, there's 8, if you're just, you know, bit of a dunce like Jay and I, and you were just having it on a pedal board on its own, then you've got the 8 presets you can flick through. Or if you're like you or Matt, kind of pedal board galaxy brains, as it were, then yeah, there's loads more presets available. So yeah, it looks super cool. It's less money than I was expecting, and I think it fills a gap for people like me who, I mean, modulation's not my thing, but what I'm saying is people that wouldn't necessarily have, you know, like a switcher and a laptop hooked up and like, you know, tons and tons of ungiggable rig type deal, shall we say.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it seems like a super cool option. I'm really looking forward to listening to this. I think it's a really cool pedal. J. Cross, after, you know, a handful of posts that have been thrown about in the Guitar Nerds Facebook forum, it looks like Fender are getting into swinging.
Yeah, so the Fender Swinger is a guitar that existed for about 34 seconds in 1969.
Yeah.
And actually, my kind of introduction to the Swinger was a video that Mark did about 5 years ago. Maybe,
of course it was.
Maybe longer.
Yeah, something like that.
And it was that the video, the 5 weirdest Fender guitars you never knew existed or something
like
equally
that.
Clickbaity.
Yeah,
The reintroduction of the Swinger has actually been great for our sort of our YouTube
for that video,
revenue.
Really? So, basically the Swinger is a guitar that was... a really small number was released. They reckon maybe 250 or 300.
But it was made in 2 different pickup configurations, right?
Yes. There was... actually, I'm not sure if there was... to be honest with you, I don't know.
I'm sure there is because I looked up vintage
single
ones
and
with both.
Single and dual, unless they... But
there's also a whole bunch of other stuff as well because it had different names.
Yeah, because it was...
Right. Well, oh, I understand.
So the Fender, the Swinger, also known as Fender Music Lander and the Arrow.
Yeah.
How that relates
Music
to the...
Music Lander.
Yeah.
Music
Lander, How that relates to the pickups, I don't know.
I'm not sure that it does. And actually, I don't know if there were 2 pickup versions done because basically it's the body of a bass 5...
What?
So the bodies were old bass 5 bodies.
Right. Because that was also very unpopular.
That was also very unpopular. And basically the geezer who worked there, who was this guy, Babe Simone, who was just sort of given free range to sort of do what he wants.
Right.
And what he did was he took a bunch of bass 5 bodies that no one was buying and reshaped them.
Yeah, cut a hole in the bottom of them.
Basically, to make them look like... So for people who don't know what a Swinger is, imagine if the Fender Mustang had been brought out by BC Rich. I would say
it's
close as you'll get to an explanation of what
that
the Swinger
exactly
looks like.
What this
That's
is.
Kind of what it looks like. And so the bass 5 was the a bass that, Joe, you came very close to buying at one point.
I still on the lookout for one, yeah.
And so the bass 5 was kind of a slim P bass type shape, very, very narrow, and it was E to C.
That's right. Yeah,
so high C. But yeah, obviously, what a ridiculous concept for an instrument.
But you only had 15 frets. So it was,
right, okay. So they.
So the idea is you went up across rather than up down.
Up
down.
Across instead of up down.
Yeah, you went turn the top side top wise.
I get what you're saying. So. What they did was they took the bodies, reshaped them into something completely different, and then used the necks and the, not the headstocks, obviously, but they used the necks and the pickup assemblies from Music Masters, which were guitars that were obviously quite popular, and they were single coils.
So this was introduced very much as an entry-level instrument.
This was introduced very much as a, look at all of this stuff that we've got. Can we please do something about it? And so that's why it was introduced. And that's why there was only... this says between 300 and 600 produced.
Wow, I had no idea it was that rare.
Yeah, yeah. And the headstock is very, very weird. So the name Arrow came from, probably the headstock being this like really
well
weird
they just
point.
Didn't shape it,
yeah.
did they? It's just
so the Wikipedia page is very, very sparse, but what it does say is that Tina Weymouth from Talking Heads used one occasionally. Ben Queller used one.
I found quite a few for sale when I started looking at old swingers, which I thought was which was unusual considering
how rare they are.
Yeah, I think a lot of them have been messed around with though. I was just having a look and there's people, you know, adding extra pickups and all sort of stuff like that. I think finding one in original condition.
Sure. But just the fact that there were, you know, enough still in, you know, working condition to be able to be sold on the internet.
Yeah,
50 years later is quite something.
And that you know kind of takes us to the release of them. And basically, this is a Japan exclusive.
Right.
So these are made by Fender Japan to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Swinger. I mean, as far as I'm aware, it will remain a Japan exclusive. I hope that we see them over here at some point. I don't know what's going on, but because they're a Japan exclusive, I know very little about them.
Of course.
I've kind of cobbled together what information I know, and what it does look like is that there are two models. So there's a single neck pickup, which is your classic Music Master
single neck pickup.
Yeah,
that's so unusual.
So
like outside of big body jazzers, where do you ever
see exactly
single
well
neck
you know
pickup?
That's the Music Master, and I guess it kind of makes sense because offset guitars are they've obviously seen a resurgence more so in Japan over spanning the decade or so before the rest of the world kind of got back into them, but the Music Master was always a single coil guitar,
right?
And then the Duosonic was the double pickup version of that.
Right.
There's also a double pickup version of the Swinger, and from what I can tell, and this to be honest with you comes more from reading the posts that other people have done when they've Google translated the Fender Japan website about it. It looks as though the single pickup one is a nitro lacquer.
Really?
Yeah. That's the information that I've gleaned from reading a bunch of posts about it.
I bet that's a mistake.
It doesn't make sense that one wouldn't be. So we'll see about that. And also, surely if one was going to be kind of a deluxe spec, it would be the one with two pickups.
Yeah.
So
unless they're doing one like a
super authentic.
Maybe.
But then again, I'm not sure that you'd, if you were doing a kind of modern swinger, I'm not sure you'd put that like dodgy looking three barrel saddle bridge. Yeah, I mean, I love it, but you know, doesn't it sort of scream?
I see what you mean. Yeah,
modernity, does it? So
bring back the Maverick is what I say, which is the other guitar that was made in 1969 out of the old Tat that you guys had lying around.
So the
Maverick, it was made out of Fender Electric 12 bodies.
Yeah.
And necks as well. So
is why it's got the big.
It's got the hockey stick headstock. Yeah, but it's got the pickups. Oh, no, it's the pickups from the 12 as well. So it's like the split.
So essentially it's a 12 string, but just
with six strings.
With six strings, but also the body is cut in a weird way, much like the Swinger. It's like bits chopped out of it. And then they just had some leftover Mustang bridges. They're like, let's just use them.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're very, very weird.
It's such an interesting time period for Fender when they sort of tried a few things that didn't work. So just decided to.
Just used up the bits. I love the bits.
And say, yeah, it was great.
Let's do it now.
Ultimate bitses. Yeah. I'm really into it. Very cool indeed. Well, that actually brings us up to time. On this week's regular episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast, we're going to be continuing over on the Patreon, where for as little as $1 a month, you can support the podcast. $1 a month obviously gets you the regular episode ad-free and early. And it gets you access to Guitar Nerds Live, hosted by Mark Packham. Obviously, you can listen to that without being a Patreon retrospectively, but you get to be included in the actual Guitar Nerds Live podcast and ask questions and be spoken to. Provided you're, not calling in with a potato as a router, which is, is a fantastic option. $5 a month gets you the Patreon episode ad-free and early, and $10 a month makes you the executive, an executive producer, and it gets your name sung in a lovely song at the end of each episode. I'm really running out of themes. I did like a Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, sort of like a...
I listened to the new...
Ghosteen.
I listened to that record this week really after you talked about it. It's really good. Yeah.
Really good. But I think maybe me doing a song sort of inspired by it was a little too much, potentially. It was just a bit weird, really. Okay. I listened back to it and I was like, oh, yeah, that sounds like acid, all right. But, you know, the I'm hoping to find some new genres and... maybe
new drugs.
New genres of
chemical. I don't think there are any new ones. Anyway, you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Guitar Nerds and join us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/Guitar Nerds Forum. And you can subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Guitar Nerds.
Which we keep bang up to date. Please watch that Fender video.
Yeah. It's only from 5 years ago. Cares
some money for absolutely nothing.
Money for old rope.
I really wish I'd had the courage to butt in then, because when you were talking about Joe catching them all, I just wanted to say Cocodex.
Cocodex?
Yeah.
I don't get it. Like, oh, the Pokedex. Yeah, sorry, I do
I'm
get it.
I'm doing a clean tour at the moment, I have, you know. I'm,
are you?
I'm really good.
Is that why you're shaking?
Yeah, that's withdrawal right there. Anyway, that's it for us for this week. We'll be continuing over on the Patreon episode. Farewell.
Cheers, gang.
Richard
bye-bye.
Sudworth, Brian Insler, John Half, Gavin Vandal, Linden, Jacob McGee, Christopher Franklin, Mark Hizau, Katowacki, Rob Basto, Stephen Burke, Robin Butterworth, Neil Milton, Mern Peters, Stuart Robson, Jeffrey Wax, Christian Lundhansen, Zach Milton, Keith Adams, Steve Ferguson, Eric File, Andy Joyce, John Anglin, and Adam Royce, Chris, Jake Cutmore, and Rob Poole, Scott Hamilton, Tucker Amadon, Ernie Cooper, and Ross Edwards, Nate Nagel, Stephen Hench, Rob Grant, Matt Robinson, Dave Lee, Emma James Baker, Juan Collier, Aaron Sherman, Blake Wyland, Andrew Good, Jamie Kemp, Jake Gray, Matt Bellamy, Martin Cliff, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Loseth, Hans Ams, Robin Smith, Eric Rich, Chris Connors, Rob Nordvik, Ed Bentley, Steve Merkel, Carlos Mancha, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Blair Tom, Scott O'Brien, Laurie Anstis, Paul Cargan, Will Clare, Boo Gravett, Phil Thompson, Adrian Day, Ken Sayers, Matthew King, Scott Gaines, Sean Arbo, and Christopher Wolfman Cuthbertson. All of the Guitar Nerds executive backers. Thank you.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.